Hello and welcome to Dollars and Cents, presented by North Main Financial. I'm your host, Joshua Dobie. Thank you so much for hanging with us here. 4 o'clock hour, sprint run, 53 minutes, 41 seconds until we get to the end of that 5 o'clock line there. I appreciate so much you hanging with us as you get to look at that and the finish line, but make the sprint. Don't give up yet. You got a few more minutes to go, and I appreciate you spending that time with us here on Dollars and Cents, presented by North Main Financial. As I mentioned, my name is Joshua Dobie. I'm a certified financial planner, CFP professional. I've been doing this whole investment management, financial planning end of things. Now, I know, hold on, wait for it. Coming into 29 years. Amazing, because I'm 31 years old. So that's not true. Especially if you're watching me on the socials here, you know I'm lying to you and looking at it. But at any rate, 29 years coming into to this business, and certainly have seen a lot of things coming and going. And we're in a space right now, not unique, but certainly very interesting in terms of where we are economically and financially here. We're going to be talking a lot about that here today. But you know, as a previous listener to Dollars and Cents, that we're talking on all manner of subjects. We're looking at individual companies, stocks. So we're going to be talking about it again here today, some in a positive light, some in a not so positive light, perhaps. But in doing so, nothing we're talking about here is intended as a specific recommendation for you. Meaning that even though we're going to be talking on these things, we're going to be hitting into them, especially the stuff that's on your headlines once we get into the what's hot end of things segment-wise here in just a few moments. That again, in doing so, no recommendations to buy, sell, or hold. Again, everybody's situation is unique. We strongly, strongly recommend you reach out to your tax advisor, to your financial advisor, or if you'd like to reach out to us at North Main Financial Group, love to chat with you. Love to hear about your particular financial situation to see if there are ways in which we might be able to be helpful to you. Online, you can find us at northmainfinancial.com. That's north like the direction, main like the street, financial.com. Northmainfinancial.com. We have a contact page on there. Leave us an email address, a phone number. Let us know the most preferred and desirable ways for us to contact you. Again, at northmainfinancial.com. You're also welcome to call us here in the studio. Love to hear from you. Can't promise we're going to get your particular question on the air. We really do try to do that whenever folks call in, and especially if we have to squeeze it in. We really do try to do that here, but I can't promise that it's going to happen. I promise you, though, that if we don't get it in on this show, we'll get it in on the next show or very soon thereafter in order to be able to address it, because we want to be relevant. We want to be pertinent to the kinds of things that are top of your mind when it comes to all things economic and financial. I mean, believe it or not, we're in a presidential election season. I'm sure you know that. I mean, gosh, how can you not know it, that we're in a presidential election season? So there are all kinds of questions that are coming up around that kind of thing, and certainly we'll give attention to those today and in the weeks and months ongoing as we make the sprint towards the general election here in November. But please give us a call, 844-STUDIO-4. That's 844-788-3464, 844-788-3464 here in the studio. If you'd like to give us a buzz and relay your question, and we'll see if we can't get it on the air and address it. All right, let's go. What's hot? And when we're talking about what's hot, yeah, on fire, right? I'm on fire. Is that what you're saying, producer? I'm on fire here? I hope so. I hope you mean that in all the most positive ways.
Of course.
I am whatever is the opposite in terms of being up to date on the current lingo. So I'm just going to assume that being on fire is a good thing. I mean, I grew up at a time when being on fire was not such a good thing. So at any rate, all right, let's get going here in what's hot. We're going to be talking on a number of different things. We're going to be hitting on a number of different points, though, with regards to interest rates. And I know you're looking at interest rates like, gosh, that's a reason to take a nap. I don't blame you for thinking that. But interest rates affect everything. And I mean everything that has to do with our financial lives. That's not just hyperbole. I truly do mean that in the literal sense, that interest rates just touch on everything. We had Jamie Dimon. If you know Jamie Dimon, president, CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase, ticker symbol JPM, John Paul Mary. Not a recommendation to buy, sell, or hold J.P. Morgan Chase stock or bonds or anything else along those lines. But he came out this week with what I thought was some, especially for the CEO of arguably the most powerful financial institution on the planet, or certainly one, let's say one. I don't want to get too narrow there. Certainly one of the most powerful financial institutions on the planet, came out with some pretty definitive words. Now, Mr. Dimon is known for that. He's done that his whole career. He's one who's not afraid to be a little bit more outspoken probably than some other CEOs are. with regards to all kinds of subjects, not just financial things, but or bank related things, but politics. He's been known to be a little bit more definitive than other perhaps CEOs of Fortune 500 companies are. But he came out and said this week, I thought was interesting, and said very publicly that he wouldn't be surprised if we get to 8% in terms of interest rates, meaning 8% in terms of where the possibility of the short end of the Treasury curve may get. Now, that's a huge move over where we are right now. And when I heard that, he obviously is very intelligent. He's done very, very well throughout the balance of his career. I'm certainly not trying to pick an argument with him. But when I'm looking at that, moving to 8% at the short end of the yield curve, that would be huge. That would be, I mean, right now we're about 4.5, 4.7, 4.5, 4.7 at the front end of the yield curve right now. When I say the front end, I mean short duration things, 2 years, 5 years kinds of things. 10-year right now is ringing around 4.35, 4.4 right now. And I know I'm getting technical on you. Hang with me here. There's a reason why. But when he said there's a possibility we go to 8%, I said, boy, that's a lot. That would be a big, big move. And I'm emphasizing that. I'm getting kind of in the weeds here with you on this. Not to lose you, not to put you to sleep, I promise. But in looking at that, if we move to 8% on the short bond, or let's say on the 2 to 5 year bond, or the 2 to 5 year end of the curve, that would have huge implications. That would slow things down, meaning that from an economic standpoint, I can't say we would stop. I don't believe that would be the case, but that would slow things down. Because when you look at the cost of capital implications, and you're saying, well, what does that mean to me? All right, I'll put it right on the ground for you here. Car loans, mortgages, credit cards, school loans, all kinds of things that would have direct implications on that kind of movement, especially that dramatic of a movement already. I mean, you've already had dramatic movement here over the last couple of years. So it's not like we're starting out from a ground zero. We're already have moved dramatically here in the last 2 years. We're going to move above and beyond that up to an 8% in the 2 to 5 year yield curve. That would be huge. And, you know, what would the implications be? No way to know that in advance. Frankly, the moves we've made in the last couple of years have been historic in terms of how much and how fast that we've moved them. When he said that, I thought, boy, that's interesting. Now, he may be hedging a little bit, or he may be overall saying something like, be cautious, be wary, don't get too carried away on things. I appreciate that. But when he put a number to it, I thought, well, that may have been a little bit more than you should have done. Maybe talk in more general terms. I know that. It's not like he's calling me, right? And I don't think he's calling. Producer Bill, is he calling the studio? We don't have Mr. Diamond on the line.
I have not had a Mr. Diamond
yet. Not yet? Okay.
Not yet.
We'll pay attention to it because you never know. I'm just kidding. He's not going to be calling in here. That's why I call it Mr. Diamond and not Jamie, because I read a lot, like so many other folks. I read a lot about what he says, but certainly I don't know him personally. So we're going to be watching that. And there are going to be a couple of other things that we're going to talk about here on Dollars and Cents today with regards to where interest rates are. Federal Reserve came out a little bit this past week. We're going to be spending a little bit of time on that. Some of the governors were out making speeches, which, by the way, they do all the time. I mean, it doesn't always hit the headlines, but they're always making speeches to this group or that group with regards to their thoughts and where they see things. So always kind of looking at those sort of things in order to understand where the various members of the Board of Governors are thinking and the kinds of things that they have in mind. So we're going to be putting that together. And also I'm going to bring to you the futures markets, because very interesting in terms of the number of cuts for this year. You've heard me talk about this a lot. Very interesting to see where we started, where we are now, and where I think we may end up. I'm going to catch my breath here as we hear from our sponsors here on WSIC and Dollars and Cents.
There's more of Dollars and Cents with certified financial planner Joshua Dobie on the way from 105.9 100.7 WSIC. Now more of Dollars and Cents with certified financial planner Joshua Dobie on 105.9 100.7 WSIC.
Hello and welcome back to Dollars and Cents presented by North Main Financial. I'm your host, Joshua Dobie. Thank you so much for hanging with us. Second quarter football reference. Here, you know, we're closer to football season, Producer Bill, this week than we were last week.
I'm excited.
I know it's baseball.
And I don't
season.
Even know why I'm excited, but I am excited for football season.
Hope springs eternal. I mean, yes. If you're living here in the Carolinas and you are anything remotely close to a Carolina Panthers fan, this is where it counts.
Yes.
This is where I mean, the rubber is hitting the proverbial road here in terms of your intensity of fandom at this point. So, I mean, it's all right now. I mean, to use yours and the boss man's phrase,
it is early.
It absolutely is early. Yes. I mean, we all have the same records at this point. I mean, we are all starting from the same start line. Anything is possible.
I like it.
All right. So it's still said that it's not that I'm not watching baseball. I don't want to hear from you guys and tell me I don't like baseball or hockey. I love all that stuff. Truly, I do. But at any rate, appreciate you hanging with us here into the second quarter here on Dollars and Cents. As we were going to break there, we're talking about interest rates, and I hope I didn't lose you. I know I was getting a little granular talking about with Jamie Dimon, the CEO of JP Morgan Chase, one of the largest financial institutions on the planet. And Jamie, I'm not friends with Jamie Dimon. I'm not talking about him in that way. But I'm saying it from the standpoint that he's often very candid in some of his thoughts. And he raised some things with regards to higher interest rates that I thought were, and this is very subjective, so that's why I'm saying I thought were probably a little bit more definitive than he should have been in terms of defining where he thought interest rates were going to go. I can understand if he says they're going to go higher. Certainly, if you look at the 10-year Treasury, sidebar, if you're looking at the 10-year Treasury here over the last month, wow. Significant increase from a percentage standpoint in terms of the movement. We're looking at 60, 70 basis points, which doesn't sound like a lot, and overall maybe not a lot, but in terms of percentages, a lot of movement here in the last month or so. So he may have been doing a little bit, and you hear me talk about this a lot, a little bit of linear thinking. Could have been true. Could have been that he sees things going up, and so he just thinks things are going to continue to go up. Even he is mortal. It may have been true that he was thinking about it in that way. But certainly when you're looking at it from the standpoint of what the Federal Reserve has said here over the last couple of weeks, or from the governors, let me say, not just Chairman Jay Powell, but from the other governors who have made speeches here in the last couple of weeks, it's possible. Certainly the 10-year Treasury has been increasing in terms of its yield, which means the principles are coming down. Remember, we talked about that last week in What to Know here on Dollars and Cents about the inverse relationship between yields and bond values, meaning bond yields and bond values, meaning that if you're holding a bond and overall in the secondary market interest rates are rising, then the value of your bond is going down or decreasing in value. Now, you hold on to it to maturity, and so long as it's either with the U.S. government or some other agency that makes good on the principal, you will receive that at the point of maturity, but the near term, meaning the trade value of it, if you needed to sell it before then, that value is going to decrease. And that's what we've been seeing here over the last couple of weeks. And it really ties into what I'm going to say next here, in part because the market is shifting. It truly is. It's been very interesting to see. You've heard me talk a lot about this, that at the end of last year, fourth quarter of last year, the futures and options markets, so futures contracts, let's just say those are, for lack of a better term, bets made on movements in various securities, various commodities, interest rates, just about anything you could buy a futures contract on at this point, that there was an assumption made in the futures market that there were going to be up to and including 7 interest rate cuts by the Federal Reserve this year. Well, friends, I got news for you. It's not going to happen. Now, I said that at that time as well, and this is not me saying I told you so. My thought was then, not because I was smarter than the Federal Reserve, but looking at it, I said, how in the world are we going to do that? We just barely got out of the gate of finalizing our interest raises, meaning our rate raises. How in the world are we going to get 7 cuts inside of 12 months, pretty much immediately following that raise cycle? That never has happened before. I'm not saying it can't, but nothing was indicating that at all. Well, then 7 in the futures markets, 7 became 5, 5 became 3, and now we're about 2. Very interesting. And now for the first time. So here we are looking at mid-April. Right? Mid-April and, I hear you. And mid-April, looking at where we are right now and saying, we may not have any rate cuts at all. Very interesting. Very interesting. And the market does this sometimes. This is not unique, not a first timer. And I'll be saying, oh my gosh, this never happened before. No, nothing like that at all. But very interesting in how quickly the market has pivoted. And you've heard me say this. I'm going to say it again because I think it's important with regards to where things are economically, but also as you're thinking about things. Folks, I don't see it. I don't see where the Federal Reserve legitimately can cut rates this year. And then, you know, I'm just now starting to get a few more folks on my side of the proverbial bandwagon because it was pretty lonely there for a long time. But again, anything's possible. They may cut. Now that it looks like the pricing on the futures market says that they may cut here in November. Maybe. We'll see. And I say that because of what printed last week. Excuse me, this week, the PPI printed yesterday, actually. But the CPI, so the most commonly used inflation indicator in terms of, let's call it a public dissemination of data, CPI, Consumer Price Index, what folks pay, generally speaking, for different kinds of things. Hotter than expected, 3.5% year over year, March to March, meaning March 23 to March 24, 3.5%, I would say probably about 30 to 40 basis points higher than expected. What that means is, again, inflation hasn't been completely tamed yet, certainly not moving any closer to the 2% professed target by the Federal Reserve Board of Governors in terms of where they want things to be. Now, I you've heard me say as well, I think 2% is unrealistic. I don't think we're in a space right now where we can raise rates enough without just shutting things down to get us down to a 2% inflation rate at this point. But that's where they've professed they want to be. And now we're moving in the other direction. Now, this is 1 month. You know me. I don't get carried away with single data points. I think it's inappropriate. Certainly not going to get wired up on that right now. But I'm spending a lot of time on this because there's a shift. There is a differential. There is a delta directional move in terms of going in a separate space. So I'm bringing that to your attention. Be watching for that at this point. I don't anticipate that we're going to see a rate cut this year. I truly don't. And that is more subjective. That is my opinion. Certainly when I'm sharing that with you here on Dollars and Cents, but I don't see a rate cut at this point. And I say that because I think that's important. I know the market wants it to happen. Now, certainly the equity markets. I mean, every time there's even a hint of an interest that the Federal Reserve is going to be cutting the rates at any point, the market just shoots up in a positive direction. I appreciate that. I mean, they're looking at it in a very near term, looking at it in terms of cost of capital benefits to the publicly traded companies on the stock exchange. I get that. I mean, that's understandable. I think a little bit very short-sighted in terms of how they're looking at it, but that's what the market's trying to do, trying to get out ahead of it. So just watch it. I don't see it at this point. Don't see if the rates are going to be cut anytime soon, but certainly we're going to be watching them here. All right, you've had enough academia here. You know what we're going to shift to next. Yep, you got it, McDonald's. I know there's been a lot of discussion on our morning show here at WSIC, Good Morning LKN, which, by the way, if you haven't listened to it, 7 to 9 every morning, Monday to Friday, Bill, Mamie, Justin, they're talking on all kinds of stuff. I mean, all kinds of really cool stuff and serious stuff as well, but all kinds of cool stuff. And I know, now, Producer Bill, I'm coming to you on this, I know there's been some discussion about what I'm going to say next. And it's been on my radar screen here for a while. This is serious business now. I mean, McDonald's, surf and turf.
Yes.
Surf and turf. Now, you, the listening audience here on WSIC, you may have a different idea of surf and turf than what McDonald's has. But you gotta put it in the genre.
Correct.
Right? I mean, we're not talking about, you know, steak and lobster tails here.
Right.
Right?
So it was outside of the box, but very much within their box.
Well,
it was,
and I think within the definition, a broad Correct. Definition Correct. Of surf and turf, I think reasonable.
Yeah. Right? Oh yeah.
I mean, let's say raise the flag for me. Like I wasn't saying, because right now this surf and turf special I'm going to be talking about here, Canada only, I believe.
Oh, okay.
Market wise, at least what I had read, at least the test market that I had read was Canada only at this point. Doesn't mean it's not going to cross over here to us here a little bit further south of our Canadian friends, but at least at this point, I didn't see that. So for those of you who don't know, so Producer Bill, check me if I'm wrong here. Surf and turf offered again by certain locations at McDonald's here. By the way, McDonald's MCD, Michael Charles Daniel, traded on the stock exchange. Not a recommendation to buy, sell, or hold McDonald's stock, but it is a sandwich, right? So it's not Correct. A salad or something else. It is a sandwich and two beef patties. So it is the traditional double burger, double cheeseburger.
I like where we're going.
Okay, and then in the middle is some version of the filet of fish.
Yes.
Okay. So and I don't know if it's the same filet of fish. Like they just say, well, I mean, I would think from an efficiency standpoint, they would say, okay, let's just grab the filet of fish over here and a double cheeseburger and kind of meld it together. I'm sure that would be good cost wise.
Yeah, what a time to be alive, right?
I mean, I do. I love this kind of stuff. I mean, you could obviously tell the excitement in my voice. Yeah. Even though it didn't raise the flag for me, I am still exceptionally willing to be part of that case study.
Correct. I'm not above it. That's for sure.
I'm not. I really don't know. Like, I mean, one of the things, this is how silly I am. What kind of sauce combination do you put with that?
Right. I was just thinking.
See? I mean, that's the kind of stuff that keeps me up and that's
right.
It may be true. Maybe
no, that's the serious
true.
Stuff we talk about on Good Morning LK. I
mean, like, what's the sauce combination? Right. I mean, do you go more the ketchup mustard route? Do you go more the mayonnaise-based tartar sauce route?
Right.
See, that's the serious stuff.
Right, but that's why we need to be in this testing.
We do.
Right, we need to be in there.
I'd like to go both ways. I would like to have option A and option B, where mm-hmm. I am trying both and providing my very.
Well, we like to collect from different data points.
We do. We like more data points.
More the better.
I mean that's where you come to more definitive kinds of theorems.
Correct.
Right. We get more data underneath it, and we make sure that what we're talking about is legitimate. When I saw that again, I'll admit my eyebrows raised.
Yes, that's a great. That's what happened.
That kind of thing. And I do like that. You know what? Be innovative. I mean, McDonald's. I mean, I think without any argument. One of the most innovative, certainly quick service restaurant, fast food sort of spaces, arguably the most innovative out there. They're always trying something.
I'm loving it.
And I see what you did there. Well done. Yeah. I'm loving it. I said, well done, sir. Well played and excellent timing. Just like a good comedian that would do that. So kind of interesting. We'll see where that takes off. We'll see if we get it here in the States. I mean, obviously it's going to have to do well in some test markets before we get it over here. I, for one, sounds like producer Bill will be another one. We're probably going to have our share if they do. All right, friends, hang with us here. Hearing from our sponsors here on WSIC.
Dollars and Cents with your host, Certified Financial Planner Joshua Doby, continues straight ahead on 105.9, 100.7 WSIC. We are back now with more of Dollars and Cents with your host, Certified Financial Planner Joshua Doby on 105.9, 100.7 WSIC.
Hello and welcome back to Dollars and Cents presented by North Main Financial. I'm your host, Joshua Doby. Thank you so much. Hanging with us into the second half there. We got a little bit out of the academic. I mean, I was giving you interest rates for about 20 minutes straight there. I had to come in with something like McDonald's and the surf and turf. Producer Bill and I were talking while we were on break there. They're going to call it surf and turf. I mean, there are some very intelligent people paid a tremendous amount of money who are probably coming up with all kinds of variations. On that. I mean, here's another. I mean, I'm going to show you my age. It's okay. I'm not ashamed. So, producer Bill, this may have been before your time. Do you recall from any of your readings? I don't think it was around when you were intaking on McDonald's at a high level, the McDLT.
No, I've never heard of this.
Okay. So, this was a two-sided sandwich box. So, you know, the normal Big Mac is, you know, it's kind of flips open, right? This one actually was two-sided and you had the cool side. So you had the vegetables and the bread and the mayonnaise on one side. So you kept the cool side cool. And you had the other side of the bun with the burger, kept the hot side on.
Wow.
McDLT.
That's
the
good old days right there.
It was good. Now, truthfully, I didn't know there was any different from any other sandwich at McDonald's, frankly. I don't know.
Right.
I mean, I'm sure there's somebody out there who's like, wait a minute, it was its own. It probably was. I'm sorry, I didn't know. But yeah, McDLT, keep the cool side cool and the hot side hot.
I like it. I like the logic.
You know? I mean, it was, they were good. I mean, I may have eaten, you know, a couple hundred of them, so I think they weren't too bad. All right. We're going to keep going on here from interest rates and McDonald's, looking around here at what's hot. What's coming here? I told you also about the CPI print, and I say that again. I know that's getting into the academic, getting into the weeds there a little bit. CPI and then the PPI, or the Producer Price Index, came out yesterday at 2.1%. Again, hotter than expected. And certainly, well, I shouldn't say that, more than last month. Last month, 1.6, this month, 2.1. And again, I'm not trying to lose you there on the granularity of the data points themselves, but rather to say, okay, what's the real world impact? What does that mean for me? What does that mean when I go to the grocery store? What does that mean when I go to the gas pump? That's really why we're sharing that with you. And what that means at this point is inflation's still out there, and it's still out there in significant ways. I shared with you a couple other data points here a couple of weeks ago with regards to experiences at the grocery store. I don't need to tell you this, but I mean, these are the scientific facts on that kind of thing. 37% increase here over the last 4 years and the average trip to the grocery store. And I don't know about you, but mine's a lot more than 37% here over the last 4 years. Now, I attribute it to everybody else except me because, no, I can't do that. I can't even blame anybody else in my household. It's probably due to me, but at any rate, it is significantly more than 37% there at the grocery store. And interest rates have an effect on that. They absolutely do. That inflects the inflationary pressure. It affects the costs of the commodities, of the raw materials in order to produce the food, certainly in terms of the CPG. End of things are shelf-stable kinds of items as well, significantly more expensive to produce those things. And to get them in cans and boxes and bags and all of the things that are on there, significantly higher expense. So we're seeing that. So the higher inflation at this point, that's why I'm saying, and I've been saying it, I know I've been repeating it, I apologize for the repetition on this kind of thing. I don't see where we can cut rates in the near term. I don't see where the Federal Reserve can legitimately, and for economic reasons, come in and say, okay, it's time for us to cut rates now because of fill in the blank. We're just not in that space where I think we can do it at this point. So that's important to keep in mind. All right. Among other things that are increasing in expense. And I mentioned this about a month or so ago when this first came across my newsreel or across my headlines in looking here at What's Hot. And that has to do with the cost of renting and the cost of home ownership. Boy, have those costs increased a lot. And I'm looking specifically at insurances, and I'm also looking at real estate taxes when we're talking about home ownership, and then general maintenance items as well, or updating to your homes. You put those three items together, and those costs have increased dramatically. As a matter of fact, just with regards to homeowners premiums, which, by the way, homeowners insurance or renters insurance, that'd be the kind of thing that you would own to cover your dwelling, meaning to cover the house and the property, and it may also cover, especially with renters policies, may cover your possessions. It will also cover, in many instances, liability up to a certain extent, meaning if someone slips and falls or if you are liable for something in your home, it will provide some level of coverage for you there as well. I'm looking at costs of about 10% increasing year over year just on homeowners policies. Now, automobile policies even more. But the reason that was given in this particular white paper report that I read, the reasons that were given for that were because of some large storm experiences by our major insurers. I'm looking at State Farm, I'm looking at Allstate, I'm looking at Nationwide, some of our Progressive, the largest insurers when it comes to home and auto sort of things here in the country. And so the blame has been given to several of these large storm experiences, but we haven't had the huge hurricanes or floods here over the last couple of years. So I'm a little bit skeptical of that, a little bit raising my eyebrow, wrinkling my nose a little bit at that. Not because I'm saying they're doing anything illegitimate. I'm just saying, well, we haven't had the same kind of storm experience that we've had in previous years. But what absolutely is true, whether it's due to inflation or any other factor, loss ratios with regards to property and casualty insurance companies, meaning more folks are making claims for whatever reason, that the costs have gone up notably. And that's important to keep in mind, because sometimes when folks are, especially if you're looking at buying a home for the first time, very often, very understandable, you're looking at basically, can I make my mortgage payment? Can I pay the principal and interest relative to taking out a mortgage? And that's important, very important to keep that kind of thing in mind. But boy, that's just one piece of the pie. There are a whole lot of other pieces of the pie here. There are insurances. There are real estate taxes. There are maintenance issues. There are replacement issues, meaning that you may need to replace parts of your HVAC system or your roof or the hot water heater, all kinds, carpeting, flooring, all those kinds of things which have wear and tear associated with them. Even if you don't do anything, you don't cause any damage to your home, those things have wear and tear. They have life associated with them, meaning that at a certain point, they break down or they need to be replaced. Very important concept to keep in mind, especially when it comes to ownership on those kinds of things. And those costs are going up. So I'm bringing that to your attention. You may know that already, but I want to make sure that you're aware of it, certainly as we're looking at what it means here in this real estate environment. Here we're talking about the residential side. You've heard me talk about the commercial side here in terms of vacancies, in terms of high-rise office buildings in some of our urban centers around the country here. Definitely on our radar screen, continuing to be on our radar screen, and a subsequent point on that as well. And I've seen this in several big cities right now. Not going to point them out to point them out unnaturally, but in several big cities right now where they're really struggling in terms of their public services and their public school systems about what they're going to do with an adjustment to the tax base. Because what happens with commercial high rises, without getting too granular, that the valuation on those buildings is a function of the amount and kinds of leases that they have in those buildings, meaning that the valuation is more expensive if you have more of the square footage leased for a longer period of time. On the other side of that, if you have less of that square footage leased for shorter, or in some cases, none at all, if there's nobody there, or fewer people there, then that reduces the value, reduces your real estate taxes. And we're seeing that now in several different urban centers where there are significant reductions in the valuations of these high-rise office towers now, which is reducing the amount that they owe in real estate taxes, which severely impacts public services and public schools. So what does that mean? Where does that spin out? What does that mean in terms of not just today impact, but what does that mean in terms of long-reaching, long-term kinds of impacts as well? We're going to watch and see, but it is a dynamic which is happening in real time in front of us here, so we're definitely going to be watching that to see what that means as well. All right, along the urban center end of things, all right, I've been talking negative, going to get positive here on you here. I looked at a report, and it was you know, you see these kinds of things all the time, so I'm not going to get too wound up on this, but I've seen these cities bantered about here in terms of the hottest job markets in the country. Now, you gotta watch also how that's defined. What does that mean? And I mean, is it all jobs? Is it jobs over a certain salary or income level? This one was pretty gray in terms of its definition. But I've seen these cities in terms of ones where there are a significant number of jobs and are considered to be hot job markets. I think not only in terms of the number of jobs that are being offered, but in terms also of the intensity of folks who are moving to these places. Very interesting in terms of this list. The top four, Salt Lake City, Utah, number one. Doesn't surprise me. I know a lot of people been moving out to the Salt Lake region and really Utah overall. Very, very popular right now. Producer Bill, I know you were out there not too long ago. I mean, beautiful part of the country.
I was. It is. It is a beautiful area.
It really is spectacular. Not just Salt Lake City, but the surrounding areas there as you're getting up into the Rocky Mountains.
And it looks like a lot can be done there. It looks like it's ready to explode.
And I think there are a whole lot of folks who are agreeing with you.
Yeah.
And moving out there. So the top one in terms of hottest job market in 2023. The next three, all from Florida. Very interesting. Very interesting. Jacksonville, Orlando, and Tampa, you got Jacksonville in the northeast corner. You come down I-95, cross over on I-4, you hit Orlando, keep going on I-4, heading west, and you're going to bump into Tampa. So it's kind of a short J or a hockey stick there. But very interesting, those three being also the hottest job markets here in the country in 2023. For you locally here, wondering how we did in North Carolina, Raleigh, number 14, Charlotte, number 16 in terms of this particular list. Now, again, I don't know that this was a particularly scientific study, but the same names, no matter what study I'm reading, the same names tend to populate the top 10 or 20 or so. And certainly we continue to be in that space. So we're very blessed. Got Raleigh and Charlotte both there in the top 20. But Salt Lake and the Florida, midsection of Florida, I was going to say the Florida Panhandle, but that's really the midsection of Florida there, continues to be very popular. All right, let's keep going here. I had a lot of questions that have come in over the last, let's say, a couple of weeks or so, and I'm going to be talking about this in the final segment as well, so I'm going to tease you up a little bit here. But in terms of student loan debt relief, kind of interesting. Oval Office has been talking about it a lot here. We'll talk more about it here in the fourth quarter. Hang with us here on Dollars and Cents on WSIC.
We'll have more of Dollars and Cents with certified financial planner Joshua Dobie following these brief messages on 105.9 100.7 WSIC. Dollars and Cents continues now. Here's your host, certified financial planner Joshua Dobie on 105.9 100.7 WSIC.
Hello and welcome back to Dollars and Cents presented by North Main Financial. I'm your host, Joshua Dobie. Thank you so much. Hanging with us into the fourth quarter football reference. Now, we're closer this week to football than we were last week. I know I'm stating the obvious there. I appreciate you hanging with us. 11 minutes, 21 seconds until you get to the 5 o'clock hour if you're a 9-to-5-er, and I appreciate so much you hanging with us as you make the stretch run here towards the end of your day. All right, Wiz, we were going to break there. I teased you up a little bit. I was talking about student loans, and it's not a great subject. I get it, especially if you have one, especially if you're one who's in school, if you're a parent who has co-signed or you're needing to take out student loans. It's not exactly a pleasant experience, and I'm not saying it from this standpoint, but really talking about a question that we have fielded a lot here over the last couple of weeks as the Oval Office, as the President's office has postulated. And I have to say it this way because I'll go right to the bottom line first. This is by no means a done deal, not even close. And so it would be inappropriate to make planning decisions based upon what has been discussed here over the last couple of weeks. So I'm going to go right to the bottom line first. So we've been saying to all of our clients, all of the folks who have been asking us about that kind of thing, this is just a proposal. There have been several proposals which have been offered by the Oval Office. And this is not a political statement. This is a fact. There have been several proposals offered up by the Oval Office which have not gone forward. And actually, two of them were specifically struck down by the Supreme Court as being outside of authority of the executive branch. So this is not, again, it's not my commentary. This is where we are. So there is another one, though, that is out there right now, coming at it in a slightly different tilt in terms of how they're approaching it, specifically through the Department of Education, where there could be a possibility for a certain segment of folks to have some part of their student loans forgiven. I'm not going to get too far into the details here. I'm going to give you a couple of the points that have been postulated, but I'm going to continuously say that, again, this is a proposal. This is not something that is set yet. This is not something that is going to move forward at this point. This is a proposal. There's going to be, several of the state's attorneys generals have already said that they're going to be challenging it from a legal standpoint, meaning essentially they're going to be suing the executive branch in order to say that this is an overreach in terms of their authority. So this is by no means done yet. But what has been postulated is that for those folks who have had significant accumulations of deferred interest, specifically coming out of COVID, because as you recall, we had about 3 years on federal student loans, 3 years approximately, federal student loans with accumulations, in some cases, not all, actually in many cases there weren't, accumulations though of deferred interest, which increased significantly during that time. Even though payments didn't need to be made, there were spots of deferred interest being accumulated. Those folks could, if this would pass in its current form, they could have some level of forgiveness. But again, we're talking about pure speculation. At this point, nothing is through the machine. The other part that was in there in terms of the possibility of folks who may have some level of forgiveness are those folks who have been paying on their student loans for a very long time. So if you are one undergraduate loan in the 20-year range, meaning 20 years ago, postgraduate loan in the 25-year range, meaning you've been making payments that time, the Oval Office has proposed, nothing done yet, nothing certainly has been finalized, that those folks would have some level of forgiveness as well. Now, again, you hear me keep caveating this because I think that's important that you hear that from me, especially if you've been jumping in and out of this show here for this week's version of Dollars and Cents. I want to make sure that I keep saying it. These are proposals. We are in no way, shape, or form at a space where this is moving forward at this point. And if history or near history is any indication, I don't have a high degree of confidence that these are going to move through either. But we've received a lot of questions with regards to them. And I want to address it with you here, and I want to be able to make sure that you hear my thoughts on it. Again, proposals from the Oval Office about student loan forgiveness, long road to go. Long road to go before that actually becomes a reality. All right, let's pivot here. Let's dovetail in a what to know here before we talk about markets in order to close our time here on this week's version of Dollars and Cents. What to know? It's tax season. I know it's miserable. I'm not talking about anything that's particularly enjoyable. I feel like I've been a lot negative today. I don't think so. I don't try to. I'm a glass half full kind of guy. Right? I mean, I really am. I'm a glass half full kind of guy, correct. Right? But boy, I feel like it's been a dark show for whatever reason
it's
here.
It's the weather.
Maybe that's it. Maybe it's the clouds. You know, maybe that's what happened because of the eclipse, right? We're supposed to have significant kinds of changes in our lives.
Mercury's in retrograde.
Oh my gosh.
It's a big thing.
So I'm just out of equilibrium right now. That's just what it is anyhow. But got to talk about taxes. April 15th, here coming up on Monday, is the standard tax deadline. If you haven't filed an extension, you got till Monday to be able to file those taxes at midnight. Make sure you get the postmark if you're mailing it in, or make sure that you get it in electronically before that time. But one sidebar here, over 19 million folks have already extended their filing deadline. Now, that doesn't mean that you owe any less. And actually, in some instances, means you're going to owe more. Because if you owe and you don't pay, you're going to pay some interest on that. So just be aware of that. If you filed an extension, you don't defer just what you owe. You're also going to get some interest on top of that. Over 19 million. That's a record in terms of the number of folks who have filed extensions. So kind of interesting to see that number of folks file extensions. But then with regards to taxes overall, A, make sure you file them And this is just a sidebar. This is just a practical kind of thing as well. If you get a letter from the IRS, and I say this because we're talking with clients about this all the time. If you get a letter from the IRS, I understand it can be a little bit overwhelming. Those letters aren't intended to come with, you know, the smell of perfume and flowers. I mean, they're really not. They're intended to catch your attention. So they can be a little stark, and the language can be pretty direct. That's by design, by the way. Make sure you respond. You can even respond and say, I have no idea how I'm going to address this. I'd like to chat with you about it. That's a good response. It really is. But when you ignore them, not good. Not good at all. And we have been with any number of clients and prospective clients who have had notices and letters come from the IRS through the years, and they haven't responded to them. Folks, it's kind of like the sleeping bear. It really is. And as long as the bear is sleeping, you're fine. But once that bear awakens and is pointed in your general direction, it is not a good scenario. And that's what I'm saying with regards to the IRS. Make sure you respond. Talk to any accountant, any CPA. There is so much more value in responding. And again, it can be a response of, I don't know how I'm going to address this. I would like to talk with you about it. That's a good response. That starts the conversation. The worst thing you can do is ignore it. Truly the worst thing you can do. So make sure that's a little bit of a sidebar, but we bump into that a lot as well. If you get a letter from the IRS, no matter what it's regarding, make sure you respond. That's the most important thing. So again, tax filing deadline on the 15th, record number of folks who have filed for extensions. I don't take that as any particular indication one way or the other at this point, unless we get some additional data about why so many folks have filed extensions. It may just be that a larger number of folks are filing taxes. I mean, it may be any number of issues, but that's certainly.
Can I put you on the spot?
Absolutely. I mean, I put you on the spot enough with these obscure things.
Will the IRS send you a text?
Never in my experience.
Okay. Will they call you on the phone?
Never in my experience.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, you passed.
You know what? That is a great question, though, because there are all kinds of scams out there.
Sure.
I mean, you name it, especially this time of the year. Yeah,
right.
great point, Producer Bill, because there are so many scams and so many impersonations out there. Generally speaking, in my experience, it is old-fashioned mail.
Right.
And I mean, it's not even the first one. So if they've been sending you stuff for a while, they're eventually going to ratchet up the style, meaning you may get certified mail, registered mail, kind of stuff, because they want to make sure somebody's picking it up.
Right.
But at least at the front end, it is old style, first class mail, black and white letter. I mean, it looks like a form. I mean, in many cases, it looks like a form letter.
Right.
And except it has your name on it, probably is going to have a tax ID number on it, and probably something along the lines of you owe us kind of thing. But always what's on there with those letters is an 800 number. So you can always call in. You can always talk to the IRS. You can always verify with them as well. Now, in saying that, in my experience as well, it's miserable calling them. It is. And I'm not saying that to be disrespectful of the IRS, but it is miserable. You're probably going to be on hold for a very long time. And I mean, seriously, I've encouraged folks to call, you know, literally, I think with some things it says, you know, we're open from 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. I've literally encouraged them to call at 6:55 a.m. in the morning.
Right.
So they just wait until they open up at 7 a.m. And hopefully they're towards the front of the queue. So it's real. Don't call on Mondays. Just don't do it. I mean, it's a miserable experience. But, producer, but thank you for raising that, because that is a great question. I have never heard in my experience of them texting you. I mean, think about it. How would they get your cell phone number?
Right.
Right? So, I mean, just the practical kinds of things. You never have to put a cell phone number on a tax return.
Sure.
How would they get your cell phone number?
Great.
And even calling you, how would they get your phone number? To do that.
I need to make a couple calls real quick.
Yes. No, it's written, and it happens all the time because, you know, those things come across and they're unsettling.
Right. Yeah. You hear IRS or CRS. Yeah.
You see that, right? I mean, you owe us this money. You didn't do this correctly. I mean, it's understandable that it's unsettling, and folks want to get it resolved right away. Okay. Tell me what I owe. I'll write a check. I'll send the money. By the way, they're never going to tell you to wire money either.
Right.
Ever. Never, they're never going to do it. So if it says wire money, never going to happen. I mean, they are old fashioned. You can do checks. You can do electronic deposits with them through the irs.gov website. But it's never going to be something like that. So great. Thanks for bringing that up.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for answering.
Oh, my gosh. Absolutely. Because, again, so many times out there, so many scams, and you just got to be vigilant. If you have a question, call the space directly. Just do it. If it's from a bank, if it's from the IRS, if it's some other kind of legal, follow up on it before you send the money. Actually, we had a client just a couple of weeks ago who also was in a space where they got scammed because of an email scam. I mean, it happens all the time. It's heartbreaking for that kind of thing. But it happened. I mean, the reason why it happens, we kind of joke about it sometimes, about the emails that we get. The reason why we get them, folks, because they work a certain percentage of the time. Well, friends, we're rapidly approaching the end of our time here together on Dollars and Cents, presented by North Main Financial. Appreciate so much you hanging with us again this week. Tune in with us next week on Thursdays at 4 here on WSIC.
Serving you better than ever before. WSIC, Statesville. W290DK, Mooresville. W264CU, Statesville.